understand your value, understand your strengths, your personality. And sometimes that's hard. Everybody thinks, oh, I want to be a lead advisor, but not everybody has that personality or those strengths, at least early on. So take some time to understand you, understand your strengths, understand what you can provide early on. Try to find a firm that matches that. And it might not, and that's okay. Don't leave the profession just because one firm doesn't match up with what your skill set is or what you want to accomplish.
Hey there, Dominique here. And in this episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, we get an opportunity to talk to Dr. Martin C. of the Kansas State University Financial Planning Program. He and I discuss why financial planning is so much more personal than finance. And we talk about the value of aspiring financial planners understanding their clients' money stories and how that alone is such a crucial aspect in facilitating a client reaching their goals. Additionally, we cover a lot of things, but he shares his thoughts on the future of financial planning and what aspiring financial planners need to do to be successful in this field, like what the skill stack looks like. What are the future going to look like inside of financial planning? And what are some things to be watching out for? So if you're looking for or to make a career change or you're an aspiring financial professional, you want to pay attention to this episode on how to become a financial planner of tomorrow. So there's a wide range of skills to develop. And in this episode, we go through those skills and how you can go about acquiring them. Now, if you will please do me this favor, whatever platform you're watching on, listening on, please like and share this podcast. That's actually how the platform gives more attention to this type of content, and it puts it in front of the people that may appreciate it just like you. And most of all, I will appreciate you for it. So if you do me that favor, I would really, really, really love you for it. Now, let's get to the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals. And today we are talking with Dr. Martin C. of the Kansas State University Financial Planning Program. I just want to dive into your bio real quick so we can get directly into this conversation. I'm so anxious to have this with you. Dr. Martin C. serves as professor and department head of personal financial planning at Kansas State University, where you oversee the CFP board registered undergraduate, graduate certificate, master's and PhD programs. Your research focuses on borrowing decisions, how psychological characteristics shape financial behavior, and how consumers seek and use financial advice. Your research has been recognized with the 2014, 2017, and 2019 FPA Annual Conference Research Paper Awards, the 2016 CFP Board's ACCI Financial Planning Award, and the 2016, I think I'm going to screw this name up, Montgomery Warshauer Award. Okay. First time. You were also recognized with the Distinguished Financial Planning Alumnus Award by the University of Georgia in 2021 and selected as a member of the 2020 Investment News 40 Under 40 class. You previously served as the president of the Financial Planning Association Board in 2020, and you currently serve on the CFP Board of Directors. You earned your Bachelor of Science degree and PhD with the emphasis in family financial planning, both from the University of Georgia, and you have your CFP, which you got in 2014. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks for having me, and sorry for the long bio.
No, I was just listening to something I did a couple of weeks ago with a friend, and I was like, I've gotten to this point now where it was awkward at first listening to my bio, but then it's like, thank you and I appreciate it. So I always want to return the favor because these are things that you've earned. You know, this is kind of your resume, if you will, your living, breathing legacy. So I definitely want to give you your flowers while you're here, man. So,
well, I appreciate it. And life's a journey, as you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's dive into this topic of why personal financial planning is much more personal than finance. And I reached out to you several weeks back, and thank God to my assistant, Lauren, who's coordinated things. I had this theme of wanting to make sure that the planning profession is understood from consumers. And I wanted to give an inside view into financial planning programs. And you were so gracious to kind of acknowledge my inquiry and spend this time to kind of talk about what you are teaching in academia and how what you guys are doing over at Kansas State is shaping the next generation. So I really appreciate your time. Maybe before we get into that, though, give us a little bit your background. How did it come about that you're, you know, at Kansas State teaching this stuff?
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those stories where I screwed up every step along the way, but somehow ended up in a good location. So I was one of those that went to University of Georgia with 32 credit hours. So as a sophomore, I still took 4.5 years to graduate as I was going through that. But the thing for me was I had a semester where I didn't really go to class. I went to an accounting final and didn't know what room it was in and ended up with a 1.33 GPA, which was not something you should do. But what happened to me after that is I needed to find a new major, and I just sort of stumbled into the office for consumer economics, but also for financial planning. So completely accidental, just the way the world works, that I ended up in that meeting. And I tell you what, it's crazy when you find something you're passionate about and something you want to do, your world just takes off and you get focused and you drive. But one of the things I would share that my parents said, so I said, hey, I'm going to go be a financial planner. And they said, don't do that. All you're going to do is sell to your friends. And it's just going to be, you know, a pure commission environment. And I remember going and having that first conversation with a major professor about what is this profession really about? What are we actually doing? What's our role in serving consumers, helping them? And then how does the business side play in? So from there, I was going to graduate with a bachelor's degree and go be a financial planner, but I was going to graduate in 07. And I think everybody has scars of the market in 07. So I went ahead and jumped into the master's program and somehow found myself in the PhD program. And it's been awesome since, and I have the worst career advice ever. I served on the committee that hired a professor away from Kansas State University. Then I took his job at Kansas State University when I graduated. So all good luck.
Uh-oh, I think I lost audio just for a second. You there?
I am there. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, your video's frozen though. Okay, we're good. I'll just reset that. So very interesting path. A couple things I want to tease out is, A, you were very fortuitous by being at University of Georgia, who's got a great financial planning program. You know, Caleb Brown and, you know, Gary Clement, all those guys are, you know, around that. Then the other thing is, I think that you hit upon that I want to bring out is this notion around passion that I hear a lot. And I want to get your take on what the current crop, if you will, or the pipeline is talking, what you're hearing about that notion around passion. And then the other thing is what your parents, who were consumers of financial services, thought of this career when you first said this is what you wanted to do. Hopefully you can unpack both of those things.
Yeah, so I'll start with my parents. And I think when you go back to it, my parents had only interacted with a financial advisor that had just sold them specific investments. So it wasn't really financial planning. It wasn't really holistic. It was really just sort of an investment services arrangement. And look, at the time, that's absolutely what consumers needed and where the industry started. But they only saw it as sort of a transactional relationship. They didn't really see the advisor as their partner, as their colleague. They really saw them as really somebody that was trying to sell them a specific product. And so that was the background and experience that they had. And as you look forward to today, I would say I hear the same fears out of the students that join our program, that they really want to help people, but they really want to be on the same side of the table as clients. You know, we tell them everybody sells. Doesn't matter if you're fee only, doesn't matter if you're commission. If people don't take your advice and follow your advice, then you're going to fail as a financial planner. So sales is a part of it, but our students really thrive. Our motto is head for business, heart for people. And I think that really culminates everything we're trying to do as financial planners, is provide this holistic advice, understanding their goals, understanding their dreams, and going from there to provide the best advice possible.
No, I love that. I love that. Head for business, heart for people there. So that brings into something that I wanted to bring up with you is, what is the philosophy, and maybe you kind of simplified it in that one phrase or slogan or however you want to call that. How does that philosophy permeate throughout academia when we're talking about clients' money stories? Because for people that are listening to this that don't know, you know, I would probably name your financial planner. The reputation of the Kansas State University's financial planning program is pretty up there, right? You guys are probably top five in the nation or so. You're probably like, better than that, Dominique. But anyways, the point is people know about this school and they associate great planners coming out of it. And I guess, what is your take or philosophy around understanding the client's money story, understanding that you are sitting on the same side of the table or wanting to at least get there? How are you guys preparing the next generation for that?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. So the big competition for students is the FPA annual conference, and it's a combination of the CFP board. Ameriprise actually sponsors it, an FPA. And historically, we've been in the finals all but 1 year, and we placed in the top three like 10 of the 18 years that it's been there and won it four or five times. And it's not because we are teaching our students anything better technically than any other program. At some point, it's relatively easy to understand the technical components that most Americans are going to deal with. But what's made us different is the time that we've invested in helping our students understand how to communicate and how to make the clients feel and communicate that they really understand the clients and that they're doing their best to communicate in a way that clients would understand. Because the way I want to talk as a planner is very different than what a client needs to understand. And it's about them and their story. So I would say for us, that's been K-State since the start. We have a financial therapy program that is really attracting people from all over the country to come. And it's all about really understanding what that client wants, what their dreams are, what their hopes are. And that's where you start everything, because it's really easy to deliver the right technical advice that is not associated with the correct advice for the client based on their scenario.
Okay, real quick. Have you had trouble finding resources during your journey to become a financial professional? I mean, have you wondered, is there somewhere I can just find all the information and, you know, the inside scoop that I need? If you've been wondering how to avoid all the pitfalls of bad advice, including wasted time and money, I want to invite you to join us in the Jumpstart community. What is the Jumpstart community, Dominique? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's a place where we're bringing together like-minded individuals who are dedicated not only to finding their place in financial services, but actually growing their careers and striving for greatness so that together we can change lives and become the superheroes of the financial services industry. Look, I know that's a big, big, big ask, but if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then make sure you visit us at www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. That's www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com, and we'd love to have you. Okay, now let's get back to the conversation. I've talked over the many episodes of this podcast with firm owners that repeatedly underscore what you just said, which is like, hey, Dom, the technical part, I could teach somebody that all day. That's the easy part. It's, you know, it's the EQ, it's the soft skills, it's the bedside manner, it's the act, you know, the listening, the communication and coming alongside the client. And I guess when I think about the CFP curriculum as I went through it, just to be quite frank, there wasn't a lot of that in there. You know, I had at that point been in the industry for 15 years. And granted, they're making inroads to try to provide more with, let's call it, behavioral finance and psychology and stuff like that. But I kind of want to get your take on what you feel. So this is a two-part question. What do you feel is the state of, if you will, the CFP curriculum right now and where it has room to improve? And then where you guys are and what you guys are doing at K-State to kind of supplement for that? With the fact that you guys have had this, you know, 18 years or 10 out of the 18 years being in the finalist type of deal. So you guys are obviously doing something right.
Yeah. So I think first you have to understand it's complicated. So the CFP board has 400 registered programs all across the country. And so as you're introducing new content, you have to be really careful that your programs can actually contain and teach it. And so several years ago, it was the addition of a capstone class, which was a massive change on the amount of what universities like me had to teach and the amount of resources that you had to apply. It literally increased the course load by one, which is not insignificant for anybody that wants to graduate. So now in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a focus on client psychology. And I think that's really where the future is going to be. I would also say they designed the curriculum based off of a survey of what practitioners say is important. And it's interesting that although we've been talking about it, it didn't show up as super important until this last round. So I think there's also been a reckoning among financial planners where we've started to understand, that, hey, technical is not enough. If we don't have good, solid advice that's based on client goals and understanding their decision making, then it's not moving forward. So I would say it's about time. Yeah. I'm glad it's here. And I think the future is going to include far more of that content.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even in the title of this, at least the working title of this, hopefully we keep the title. I think we should, because the arc of the conversation is going there, which is financial planning. Personal financial planning is much more personal than finance. It's kind of interesting because I believe, and I'm going to speak for all consumers of financial services, the broad picture that most people get from our industry is not what you just named. It is somebody says, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a financial advisor. I'm a financial planner. And generally you clear the room. And I just wonder, you know, how we can change that perception, because there are a lot of really great people in this profession with a lot of really great motives. And then there's the other folk, right? I don't really know how we get the smaller minority of people to overshadow what the other folk are doing. Any thoughts on that, and maybe what you guys are teaching students there at K-State?
Yeah, so that's a massive challenge. It's always the bad apples drive the narrative and the story. And so, you know, you don't hear about the great planner that helped an individual meet their goals. You hear about Bernie Madoff and stealing money and all that other stuff. One of the things that's also said is, you know, you don't see TV shows about good financial planners. You see TV shows about people that are swindling and things like that. So it's both an earned reputation and a reputation that really doesn't match the vast majority of financial advisors that are out there. So what do we do to change it? Well, one, we've got to provide excellent services consistently. And our best referral sources, our best people to make sure we other people know we're doing our job well are the clients that we serve, and that they can talk about those services. The second is, you know, I do believe the CFP marks stand for something, and there's something about raising the standard of excellence. It's a mark that has a fiduciary standard underneath it, and that it's actually policed, one of the only marks in our area where there is actually an enforcement mechanism related to the ethical standards that applied there. So I think we've got to continue to push forward, raising the bar for ourselves, but also it's going to be changing the narrative one client at a time, because it's, as you know, one bad experience is magnified much more than one good experience.
Yeah, yeah. So you bring up an interesting point. I wonder if you would opine on this for just a second. So as a consultant and a practitioner in this field, I tend to work with people sometimes that want to start their own firm. And I've been through several of those scenarios. And what is alarming to me, and I've known this for some time, but I think it's still alarming to me, and this is where I want your opinion, or at least what you think about this, the bar is particularly low in just about every state on what it takes to start your own registered investment advisory firm. Most people that when they consult with me and they figure out like or find out, it's like this discovery, like, really, that's all? And I'm like, yeah. What do you think that does to the industry right now? I'm just interested in your opinion on this. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, or maybe there is, but I'm just curious what Martin thinks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, once again, you go back to regulation and policy, and regulators are really hesitant to create barriers of entry to professions. And that's been a trend that's gone on and gotten worse as we've moved. So I think the reality is, you know, by the time you get your license, and then yeah, it's super easy to, if you have your license to get registered to practice. So I think in some ways it's a disservice to those planners and advisors that can go out and start a business when maybe they actually need more training. They need a little bit more before they get going. It can be a disservice to the customers that you know, may not understand the level of expertise behind you. But I'd also say, you know, the majority of the new firms are opening in the RIA space, which are existing advisors, which are transferring out of one business model to another because they want to provide service in a different way. Yeah. And so in some ways, it's great that that barrier is low so that these folks that have all these skills and knowledges and training can break away and do it their way without, you know, maybe any of the constraints that they had previously.
No, I would agree. You didn't have to say it, but I'll say it. I think I have. I need to get points every time I say the broken dealer instead of the broker dealer. So, but yeah, I think, you know, just real quickly for people that don't know this, but, you know, the broker dealer model is such a model that not that it can't do good, but what I would say is the motives of that versus the independent are totally different. Whereas, you know, you're a registered representative of the broker dealer. So it's kind of hard to act in a fiduciary capacity when you represent the broker dealer versus an independent firm where you represent the client. So I think that's just a clear delineation here that some clarity needs to come about. I mean, we've gone around the horn in this industry so long about this, and obviously not the scope of this podcast, but something to just definitely think about. In the context of that, though, how do you think financial planning is going to look? And you've already kind of alluded to this. Maybe you can just unpack it a bit more. What is it going to look like in the future? Like, let's look 20 years down the road. Hopefully I'll still be practicing. I'm 46. What if I were to tell you that you could spend 2 days with a veteran of the financial services industry that has connections with dozens of firm owners and has also answered hundreds of questions about making the leap into a career as a financial professional? What if I were also to tell you that you could do this from the comfort of your laptop in an interactive virtual environment with a group of like-minded peers? Are you interested? You should be. I'd love for you to experience all of this, and you can when you register for the Career Changer Challenge happening October 29th and 30th. Now, during this time, I'm going to share with you the key elements on how to successfully navigate your journey from wherever you are currently, that's right, wherever you are currently, into a career in financial services. Look, my goal in the challenge is to help you find your place in this wonderful industry called financial services. No matter if you want to be a financial coach or a financial advisor, I just want to help you figure it out. And if you're not satisfied after attending the challenge, I'm going to give you your money back. So you have nothing to lose. All you need to do is go to www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. And when you get there, click on the video that has my handsome mug on it. There's a lot on there, but the one that has my handsome mug that says, click on the register for the next challenge button. And join me so I can share with you all the secrets to save both time and money when making the leap as a career changer. Okay, let's get back to the conversation. I'm curious as to what you see this convergence of the behavioral component and this part of it that I think goes beyond the technical aspect that you guys said you're teaching in the K-State program.
Yeah. So first, let me share something with you. So when you look at the broker dealer world, there's been a lot that's been done to clean it up and make those incentives. But the major problem has still been new folks that have started as investment advisors. They have certain production goals, and it's really hard for them to keep a high level of service and do their job early on. I would say as people get further into the broker world, oftentimes it's easier to provide that deeper level of service. But
that's a fair analogy.
I would also share two or three firms that you'd absolutely know in this last year have started new internships programs with us. And they were internship programs that historically were sales based, that now they're interning with their central CFP team. And what they're doing is trying to train these folks to be financial planners and then not start them on the you build your own book business, but there's large teams in the firm that need planning support, not sales support. And so you're starting to see placements and planning areas as opposed to the traditional advisor path. And I think that leads to what I think the future will be. I mean, you know, there's a pretty established business model and method in law school. There's a pretty established business model and method in accounting. And I think we're going to move towards that model where we'll see some consolidation. You know, that's just what happens as industries mature. As you stop seeing all these individual firms, you see more consolidated firms. But you're going to start to see people valued for the services they can provide first and the ability they can sell later. Because there's such need for talent, and it's just an arbitrary, stupid thing to get rid of really talented people that can't sell at the age of 22. Because that's not what the business is about as you mature in that business. It's about providing high quality service. So you'll continue to see division of roles, division of services, and you'll always have that front guy that's really good at networking, but you'll see more teams behind them, more comprehensive service provided, and of course, a lot more technology to support that.
Those are really great points, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know a lot of people know the history of the financial planning profession, but it's relatively new. The insurance goes back a little bit further, but as far as the coagulation of what we call financial planners today is about 60 years old. I remember having this conversation with George Kinder on this topic, and in that particular instance, we're kind of early in the game, and so the apprenticeship model that you've kind of just described is more present in what we would call mature professions. And I think that's something to definitely look forward to, because I agree. I don't think everybody needs to start their own firm. And I don't think you didn't get the breakaway just because you don't like your boss. I think there's more considerations because we probably have a lot of, let's call it, underemployed single man, single woman firms in the industry. So much so, I think it can be a little, not necessarily off-putting, but definitely confusing to the consumer of financial services. It's just like, you know, it's kind of like you drive through a neighborhood and you see like 16 churches within a half a mile on either side of the street. And you're like, okay, what are we doing here? You know, it's kind of one of those things. So I think the financial industry, I would look forward to that. And I guess in that light, what skill set, let's maybe highlight, let's call it three top skills that you would maybe encourage the aspiring financial professional to develop to fit into this model.
Yeah. And so I think technical skills, you have to have those. I mean, if you can't pass and understand the basic content for the majority of clients, you can't go anywhere. So that's not going away. It's not a de-emphasis on technical skills, but it's a raised emphasis on those empathy skills, the ability to communicate, the ability to understand your client, to take yourself out of maybe what you think is the right thing to do, because you don't matter as the advisor in the scenario. What matters is the client, their goals, their dreams, and presenting the right scenarios for them to get there. So still, you have to have those technical skills, but you're going to see a lot more of the communication side. Clients are much more likely to refer you, not if you give the best advice, but if they feel like you're bought into, you're their partner, you care about them, and you're a team. That's when, one, you're actually going to meet their goals, and two, you're going to grow as an advisor through referrals.
No, I love that. I think people don't understand all the time what that looks like or what the formula is to get there. And when it's as far as that rapport, if we can just use a word to kind of as a placeholder there, that you need to develop with clients. It is some science to it, but it's a lot of art, right? It's a lot of what I would call just being in the space with the clients, allowing them margin to express what's important to them. That's why I love George Kinder's Evoke method so much. You know, I've used some of this in my practice, where you allow space and time for the client to just kind of tell you what's on their mind, like what they value, why is money important to them? Why is the thing that they just said money can facilitate, or the goal that money can facilitate, why is that so important? And you just continue to drill down, and you do this thing where you show up genuinely curious about who that individual is. And then I think that gives you so many inroads into building what the whole relationship is around, which is trust. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's absolutely it. Once again, especially with increased technology, it's going to be really easy to get to that right recommendation. More and more technology is going to do the basic planning skills for us. And the majority of clients are more similar than dissimilar in terms of the technical areas in which planning is going to occur. So what's actually going to make the difference is the advisor's ability to understand the client, understand the empathy, and to make sure to create that sense of trust. And you know, the thing about financial planning is oftentimes the return is not based on what you get the client to do. It's based on what you stop the client from doing, the stupid stuff, from pulling out of the market when it's down and all of those other things. And if clients are also trained. So if you train a client that, hey, investment return is everything, I'd say you're shooting yourself short, and it's going to be really hard because the market's down a lot, right? And you're diversifying. So oftentimes you're going to have below market returns. But if you help clients understand that your role is to maximize the probability of meeting their goals, and it's a long-term process, and we're a team on this, and we're here together, that's where they're going to understand your value better, and I think they're going to be happier with you in the long run at that deeper level of service.
No, I really love that. I think it's reframing the relationship, because a lot of people will come to you, you know, they have their filters and this let's call it precognition on what that job is. And I always, you know, coach younger advisors, like, you get to set that expectation. Like, that's your job to set the expectation on how the relationship is going to be. If you're going to be that person that they can call you for a stock tip or whatnot, and you set that precedent, then that's what it's going to be. So you're correct in that. And I wonder, you know, is this one of those things where I think it's almost the best model that you named earlier? It is that model where you have that more seasoned advisor that's been through, you know, a couple of market cycles. They understand client psychology, human psychology, and they can pass those nuggets on to the junior advisor to kind of know what to be aware of, instead of somebody out there just kind of winging it, because this stuff is not in books. Like, I often tell you, it's like, nobody's going to ever prepare you for that call that you get when the client has had someone that they love pass away, or they're getting divorced, or they lose their job. Like, there's no CFP curriculum around that. That's just those are the things that you learn on the job. And then how do you react to that, right? Do you react judgmental or empathetic, or like, what space are you going to be in when it comes to that? So as an aspiring financial professional or career changer, I understand you have a lot on your plate, right? If you're not in classes or studying for a licensing exam or listening to a really cool podcast or attending a conference, you're always doing something, trying to better yourself on this journey, right? Have you ever thought, I really wish there was a place I could be understood, a place where I could find my tribe and kind of talk about all the things that are going on with me during this journey? Well, there is such a place, my friend. It is the Jumpstart Community Roundup. Twice a month, you get the opportunity to share your wins, your losses, and basically whatever you need help with. It's a chance to kind of get encouragement and find accountability on your journey. And this is all included in your membership to the Jumpstart Community. All you have to do is visit www.jumpstartcoachinglab for more information and to sign up. We'd love to hear your story and have you join us in this wonderful community of aspiring financial professionals. Okay, let's get back to the conversation now. What would be your term, or your definition rather, around this term, personal financial planning? What does that mean in your opinion?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things that are important there. So obviously the first word is personal. So it's not cookie cutter. It's based specifically on an individual client's goals. And I think that really is what sets what we're trying to accomplish together apart. And the other thing I think is it's planning. So that's proactive on the front end. And as you know, there are a lot of reactive planners, and obviously certain things have to happen reactively. But financial planning is proactive, meeting with those clients, trying to understand and see where the problems are and avoid those problems to begin with. But also it's ongoing. It's not that you do planning the first time you get a client and all of a sudden there's this plan and they're going to go do that for the next 30 years. That doesn't work either. You have to have a proactive process that you're working with clients to move them forward. So I think it's all about building, establishing relationship with the client, establishing that rapport, understanding their goals. And then once again, you're on the same side of the table as them, helping them to meet their goals over the long haul.
Yeah, you said something in the last segment that I think we're probably going to tease out for maybe the soundbite of the episode, which was, it's not necessarily getting them to do something. It's getting them to really, and you didn't use this word, but avoid suboptimal behavior. That's, I think we are really, if we can look at ourselves as guides to keep them from doing the wrong things more than just trying to get them to do all these other things, is that can be so valuable, because it's really, I often liken it to like golf. This is a game of the least amount of errors. The least amount of errors is the one that wins the game. So I wonder, as you know, this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. In that context, love this conversation. So great that you are feeding back or depositing back into the next generation all these things that we shared. What word or words of wisdom would you leave with that aspiring financial professional generation?
Yeah, so I think it is understand your value, understand your strengths, your personality. And sometimes that's hard. Everybody thinks, oh, I want to be a lead advisor, but not everybody has that personality or those strengths, at least early on. So take some time to understand you, understand your strengths, understand what you can provide early on. Try to find a firm that matches that. And it might not, and that's okay. Don't leave the profession just because one firm doesn't match up with what your skill set is or what you want to accomplish. And also be patient. I see a lot of graduates from the program that are 5 years out that want to own the business and move forward. And that will happen. There is a path there. But you're only 26, 5 years out. You got 40 years left to work. And as long as there's a proactive plan to move forward, you can do it. And I think sometimes you forget how hard those owners who oftentimes started it from scratch, took massive risks, have worked their butts off to attract those clients. They're their clients, right? They got them from scratch. They are right to be nervous and protective as they're handing those clients away. And it has nothing to do with the planner sometimes. It has nothing to do with the young professional. And yes, at some point they have to create that path for you, but help them create that path for you, as opposed to thinking, well, they don't like me, I'm out.
Man, that is really good advice, because man, you open up a whole nother can of worms here with this, because I don't know that people understand what you just said when it comes to that firm owner, right, wrong, or different. I had to learn this the hard way, because I was kind of the bull in the china shop at a fairly, you know, nice size RIA. And the deal is his name was on the door, not mine. These were clients that he earned, you know, and I was an employee at the end of the day. So to respect that. Hustle and hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, and nights, you know, pounding the pavement or whatever he was doing to earn those clients. And then I'm coming in like, okay, this is my relationship. It's like, no, it's not, dude. I love that you said that. I think that's a good attitude for the aspiring financial professional to come in, because then you can add value, right? And you can be coached, which is necessary. So, oh man. Dr. Martin C., I appreciate it, man. This is great that you allowed us to have some insight into what you guys are doing over there at K-State. If there's anything that Jumpstart can help with that, I would definitely would love to come alongside and partner and help the next generation kind of develop that attitude that we kind of espoused on this podcast. Thanks for the conversation.
Hey, let me tell you one more story, and it's related to my wife, who actually is a financial planner. And so she was one that graduated as 20, and if she'd been asked to sell or grow or anything like that, she was smart, she was valedictorian, obviously really good looking, but at 20 years old, that would have been incredibly hard to go and do that. So she started at a role at ACO as a support advisor, and she spent 3 years learning how to deliver advice to high net worth clients. Her husband took her to Kansas, and she started work as a director of financial planning for a trust company here. And she had to spend the time. She created planning at a firm. There wasn't planning. She created a process. She's grown. And now she's 34, which is pretty young. And she's the director of financial planning, supervising 5 or 6 planners for that firm and managing a book of about $250 million in assets. And, you know, she's 34. That's a hell of a place to be. And if she pushed earlier and departed and done that, it wouldn't have worked out. So I know as you're 20, 21, 22, 23, you're ready for that. But really just think about it. If you're at that point at 34, what does that mean for the rest of your life? So once again, only be in places where you're growing, but have a little bit of patience.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. I mean, I often say, you know, I was joking earlier, but maybe not. I mean, this industry is such that you can literally do this into your 60s. Now, that's not to say you don't need to have a succession plan or something, depending on what you want to do. But it's one of those careers where it's not like backbreaking work. You can really do this from a laptop and, you know, a lounge chair on a beach if you want. You know, it just depends on your setup. So, wow, I love that. Thank you for the perspective there. Again, grateful to you for this deposit into the audience, the Jumpstart audience, and we wish you well in the future.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.